Hello, everyone. Welcome to Restoring Our Roots podcast, the voice of the decriminalized nature movement. This podcast is a gathering space where we explore the wisdom of entheogenic plants and fungi, the beauty of natural healing, and the importance of reconnecting to the sacred earth. Every month, we'll hear from visionaries, healers, and advocates who are working to decriminalize entheogenic plants and fungi and return us to a balanced relationship with nature. Tune in, stay rooted, and let's grow together. My name is Larry Norris. I am the co-founder of Decriminalized Nature and also the National Organizing Director, which helps a lot of cities across the U.S. passing this policy. I'm really happy today to have Rachel Zammit with us, helping set up the podcast and being our behind-the-scenes guru. So really appreciate all the help you've been doing. And, you know, you'll be here throughout these next varieties of podcasts we'll be doing as sort of a big help behind the scenes and also sort of an info gathering and research coordinating individual. So I really, really appreciate you being here. And thank you for setting this up. We've been trying to do a podcast for Decrim Nature for a little while. So it's nice to finally get going on that. So thank you, Rachel. Yeah, absolutely. You know, so to begin, you know, I guess we'll start off with a little introduction of myself for those who don't know. I started doing this work in about the mid-90s, got very interested in this area. I went to a small office in Charlotte, North Carolina after I graduated from the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. I spent a lot of time doing neuroscience and biopsychology, which was, you know, very much mechanistic and felt very reductionistic comparatively to these big, surprisingly wild and unusual mushroom experiences that you can have, the sort of the expansion of consciousness. So so I got very curious in this area of research. I went to what was a small office in Charlotte, North Carolina at the time at MAPS, Multidisciplinary Association of Psychedelic Studies, and they provided a variety of professors and other folks out there who were doing this research, either at universities or sort of offsite, that type of thing. Most of those researchers I found at the time, and it's just like the mid-90s, and this just shows you how far things have gone. This is like 90, 99, 98 right at this point in time. And most people were basically hiding their research behind some other research. And so I was like, okay, this isn't really the time to be engaging in this. I think the only person that was really doing above ground research that was getting in the public eye was Rick Strassman for his work around DMT. And so, yeah, right. So, you know, that,
I'm
you know,
and then, with Rick Strassman. Yeah, just to delve in, like jump in here too, Larry, first of all, too, like, welcome everybody to the show. As Larry said, like, this has been a long time coming, and Larry's introduction is so, I think, valuable just because in terms of, I think I'll call you the main host of this podcast going forward, right? And
sure.
So this, I guess, uncovering of, like, your story as you came to decriminalize nature, keep going. Just wanted to pop in there.
Yeah, definitely. This is I think this is a big part of it. Hopefully everyone will be able to share a little bit about themselves. I think, you know, there's always people behind a movement, especially grassroots movement. And it's always exciting to kind of hear how everyone got to the point that they got, what sort of twists and turns have happened. Because a lot of us, when we started this work, this was not as above ground as it is now, or wasn't decriminalized anywhere. And there's still a lot of stigma and still a lot of concern. And as I was saying, most of the professors I spoke to were hiding their research because they couldn't talk about it publicly. So they're doing biofeedback research or neuroscience or some other consciousness type of research. And then, hey, by the way, I'm also interested in psychedelics. So this really speaks to this movement where we can even now be having a podcast to talk about this. And this podcast is a representation of 5 years of incredible work that the Decriminalized Nature Movement has done and others as well in terms of getting this policy passed. So what a journey it's been in the last, you know, so many years. So for me, yeah, it was really powerful to come across all these different people that were doing this work, came across ayahuasca, did some research on that. I worked with an organization to do integration. So we've been doing that for over a decade, peer integration circles and education through an organization called Entheogenic Research Integration Education. And then was very interested in quick, sudden transformation or archetypes of transformation that occurred in an ayahuasca experience and how to help people with integration. That's what I did my dissertation research on. What's really nice about this movement is that it all kind of came together from a variety of people all across the Oakland Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area, who were very interested and been doing this work already. We kind of met to talk about a consciousness healing center, and in that conversation, we started thinking like, well, what's the real barrier to alternative ways of healing or approaches to personal and spiritual growth or ways to expand consciousness? And we realized like, oh yeah, well, the biggest barrier is the criminalization of these entheogenic sacred plants and mushrooms that we have all around us. And we started talking about, you know, Oregon, started talking about Denver, and really started thinking about, like, is this even possible here in Oakland? And so I think what's been beautiful is just seeing people from all over the place, no matter what city they're from, oftentimes a variety of different backgrounds and perspectives. And you know, the thing that's the glue that's holding everyone together is this other space, this profound experience, this connection to source, to soul, to depth, to mystery, to awe and wonder, things that people aren't
All
really
the
connecting
juicy
with me.
stuff, right?
All the
Okay,
juicy stuff, right? Exactly. Right? And that's pulling everyone together because they're like, wow, if this was possible for me, why is this being hidden? We hear all this stuff about, you know, why these are bad and stigma. And yes, of course, people can have difficult experiences. And yes, of course, this isn't for everybody. And we're not asking to shove this down everyone's throat by any means. But we're saying is, like, here's something that really helps us know a lot more about the nature of consciousness, the nature of reality, asks us philosophical questions about, you know, existential things and items. There's even, you know, this some studies out there looking at existential anxiety, or like basically the end of life anxiety issue. You know, what happens after you pass away? Well, these are all spiritual questions that are now being asked in more of sort of medicalized framework, which, you know, there's also some challenges that can come with that as well.
Oh,
I'm sure we can talk about at some point in time, and we
yes,
can talk
that's a
about.
good segue into I have some series of questions I will ask you, Larry, just as a way to frame. This is our pilot episode, so going forward, as Larry has mentioned, that there will be other characters, players, stories to be shared on this podcast. But first of all, let's go into the origins of decriminalized nature. You went into some of the story and a little bit of, you know, how people, researchers back then, had to hide almost what they were doing. So, what's the story behind your organization in terms of it being founded, initial efforts in Oakland, which you touched on a bit, and how that like spread into a national movement for decriminalizing entheogenic plants and fungi? Because all of these things that are happening, but I think that what drew me first to decriminalize nature is just that word to decriminalize versus legalize nature, right? So please take that away.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, we had a lot of conversations when we met. You know, when we started, this was, I think, the last thing on anyone's mind, is that any of us would be engaging in policy. I never even
Seems
stepped foot into a
boring.
city. Yeah, right. I never stepped foot into city council office, and you know, now embarrassingly so, to realize, like, wow, like, if we really are serious about protecting consciousness, we can't just not be involved. We can't be apathetic. And you see that in a lot of city councils where 50 people write about this issue or call about this issue, and it blows their mind because they're like, nobody cares about city politics. Nobody's really paying attention. And
Totally
now we're
affects
turning a
you.
lot of people on. Right. And also just now we're giving people tools, because I think that was the biggest thing for me, was this, I was totally mystified by the process. I didn't even understand how to make it go, or what to make it, you know, how to make things work, or how to present an issue, or what kind of, you know, ability we have to create reality through legislation, which is kind of what's happening here, you know. So we all kind of met together. Some were, you know, doctors. Some were sort of ministers of, you know, sacred medicine churches. Some, you know, were nurse practitioners. We had, you know, Carlos, who was involved with city council stuff in the past, so he kind of understood the framework of how to sort of present this to the city council. And we brought a lot of the information and the education about the plants and mushrooms and the best practices and that, things like that. And we got together and we said, okay, well, let's give this a try, right? And so January of 2019, so over 5 years now, we really came together and you know, said, let's make this happen. So we started off just kind of like, okay, you know, the initial part is like, how is this even going to be received? Because at that point in time, the only other people that were doing this were ballot initiatives. So with ballot initiative, you can easily hide behind the language. Not saying this by any means, but there's a different kind of investment in the process. Here's the language, vote on it, yes or no, it'll be anonymous. You can talk about it if you want
How do
to.
ballot initiatives, this is just coming from someone who's a Canadian, right? And so we do things I think slightly a little bit different, but what is a ballot initiative? Is that a politician bringing something to the floor or like a bill of some sort, or how does that work?
Right. So on a city level here in the States, there's three different approaches to getting some sort of policy passed, basically. You know, one of them is a resolution process, which is the process we work through. Another one's an ordinance process. which actually changes municipal code. And the third one's a ballot initiative. And I'll speak to the ballot initiative, then I'll speak about the other ones in a second. The ballot initiative is, and not all cities can do this, but most of them have this ability to have a citizen-run policy, basically. So it's basically citizens saying, hey, we think this is an important bill. We want to bring it to the voters, and we're going to want this to be an election. So there's a whole process. You got to like go in and register with the Secretary of State with your language, and the language has to be vetted by attorneys to make sure all the, you know, everything's okay and it follows the rules. And we did this process in Colorado. We did this process in Michigan as well, in terms of looking at how to sort of get this ballot initiative to move forward. The challenging part is that you have to really you have to get a lot of signatures on the front side. In order to get it on the ballot, you need, I
The
think,
minimum of.
it's about 20%, I think, of registered voters,
Oh,
which
okay.
some years that's a big number, and off years it's not such a big number. So it also changes according to how many people are voting this year. Obviously, this year, with it being an election year, there'll be a lot more people on the next ballot initiative that you'd have to go to, because probably more people have registered than would be on an off year where there wasn't so many people. So that's going to be an expensive process just to get the signatures. Then you get it on the ballot, and then you got to convince 51% of the people to vote yes on it, right? Which is another sort of campaign you got to do. And in places where there's a lot of community that's doing this, that's great, because you know a lot of that's happening in the grassroots already. A lot of people, like in Detroit, for example, there's already been such a strong established community there before the ballot initiative came on. Then it was like kind of a they know people who know people about it, you know, and then all that kind of thing. So that makes it a lot easier, but it is expensive. It does get a little bit pricier. What's nice about on the city level is we can present it to the city council members, but always know that we have that option in the back of our pocket. One thing that I think is another element of Decrim Nature, which I think has been really beautiful, is to really build those relationships with the city council members. So rather than doing sort of an end around and cutting them out of the process by going straight to ballot initiative, we're saying, hey, we're going to work with you directly and want to make sure that we can sort of build the correct infrastructure, make sure we're talking to all the people that are important in this, make sure that everyone's on the same page, make sure we understand each other. So the process we go through is a resolution. The other one is an ordinance. The resolution is kind of like a statement by the city council, but it also can set priorities and it also can set funding priorities. So basically, the statements that's being made by the city councils is basically a de facto decriminalization, where they say, hey, this isn't a priority for our law enforcement, don't go after this. And also, we're not going to spend any resources on this. And so that's kind of how we do it there. If we do an ordinance process, which is the third of the three, that is changing municipal code. So unfortunately, that makes it kind of tricky on this on the city to state level, because the state might say, hey, you're breaking state law. You can't do this. You can't change the municipal code. You can make a statement, you can set directions and priorities, that type of thing. But when you start changing laws that conflict with other laws, and of course now everyone's like, well, that means it's still illegal everywhere. But then I remind people that, you know, cannabis is still federally illegal.
Yes,
And
that's true.
yet so I'm not sure exactly how it is in Canada, but hopefully we'll be able to get a little bit more activity going on there in
I
Canada.
dislike legalization in Canada. I feel like our communities, in terms of like the cannabis community, were stronger before legalization happened. But that's
Right,
just,
right,
yeah.
right. So that's, I mean, that's a whole nother conversation, which we can probably chat about, you know, in the future, which is like, what's the difference between decriminalization and legalization? But that's something that we did kind of chat about at the beginning. Sort of when we decided, okay, hey, we're going to do this thing, we were looking at two different approaches. One was Denver's approach, which was again a ballot initiative to decriminalize psilocybin. Then there was a approach in Oregon, which at one point in time was decriminalization and legalization of psilocybin. Then they had a big donation. They pulled that decriminalization out and put it into 110, which is there's two bills in Oregon, 109 and then 110. 110 was a decriminalization of all substances, which actually got repealed last year. I think just took into place in April, unfortunately. So now the only model in Oregon is a legalization framework, which unfortunately is expensive, you know, $3,500 to $5,000 for a single experience. And unfortunately, I mean, fortunately or unfortunately, depending upon how, hopefully the intention is all good. But, you know, sometimes when you see this kind of thing, you wonder, which is basically it's still a felony to grow a mushroom, or in Oregon, where it's literally so prolific, probably one of the most prolific mushroom growing places outside of Washington, you know, at least in the US, it's a felony to pick a mushroom out of the ground still. Those are considered manufacturing. And if you share it with somebody, that's also a felony, because that's considered distribution.
How
So the only
crazy is
place
it that
you can.
poisonous mushrooms are not illegal to pick?
Right. And you can eat as much as you want. So everyone's like, oh, it's a safety issue. That's why we need to criminalize it. Well, no, we can eat 10 pounds of poisonous mushrooms
No
and
problem.
die. No one's gonna throw us in jail or tell us we broke a law or any of that kind of stuff, right?
Oh
But
my
these particular
gosh.
mushrooms, which again, there's a lot of good arguments to one way or the other in terms of why that might be. But yeah, so that we were talking about these two, kind of figuring out the dynamic between decrim and legalization, and decided we wanted to go with a decrim approach and not just work with mushrooms, but also work with these four categories of plants, which are a little bit larger, really have this bigger conversation around nature. And nature, I think, is such a critical thing that we're talking about here. How have we lost connection to nature? How are we treating nature? How are we trying to patent nature? These pharmaceutical companies trying to come in and patent these materials because they've extracted it out and figured out how to do it in a laboratory. In the meantime, you have these things that grow out of your lawn that you could, eat to grow. Obviously, some of the other plants are a little bit more difficult to grow, but also that's another conversation too regarding sustainability and making sure that we aren't, going and harvesting in the endemic habitats. And one way to do that is to make sure you can grow your own. Criminalizing growing a plant out of the ground is probably the silliest thing I've ever heard,
I've heard of
right?
crazier laws, but definitely it's like
Of
it's a
course,
crazy
of
law.
course.
But that's a good segue into the unpacking of entheogen, I believe. And I think I've mentioned this to you before, that a big reason why I was drawn or called to work with decriminalized nature is your use of the language behind entheogen, and roughly translated in Greek, I believe it's to discover the divine within you, or discover the God within you, or this idea of like the spiritual connection that I feel like in psychedelics is not necessarily something that is like entrenched in that languaging, or this like what that word means. It comes with it. So can you just explain a little bit more about entheogen? I don't know if we touched on it in a past in my past show, but I think for this podcast. And also I know that MAPS recently had a whole thing where like MDMA is no longer like the therapeutic model, but MDMA I don't think necessarily would qualify as entheogen. So could you get into like maybe the definitions of what your terms are in terms of that?
Sure, yeah, and that's another thing that we really discussed a lot when we started. We had probably like a good handful of strategy conversations just around terminology and wording. And I know we've had some really great conversations around this in terms of how language creates the reality. We're
Totally.
talking about setting when we're talking about these plants and mushrooms. So we're also bringing a particular mindset into the conversation when we're using and choosing particular words. And psychedelic, no matter what, it has, a variety of baggage. There's a lot of issues around. Which by its definition means mind manifesting for your audience that maybe doesn't know. From that, you could say it really means soul manifesting, but it's kind of been, turned. So it's just meaning mind manifesting. It actually came from a hospital in Saskatchewan. So
Oh,
Canada is the
really?
it's psychedelics, yeah. The word psychedelics by Humphrey Osmond. Unfortunately, it was in a place where the hospital was doing slightly unethical things because it was in a low income community, so they were able to push things a little bit more than
The
they maybe
MK
should have.
Ultra
And so,
stuff.
yeah, a little bit of that,
I know, I'm aware of
unfortunately.
that here. McGill
Yeah, so
University is a little kind of sketchy too. Some
yeah, exactly.
history.
Yeah, they were doing electroshock therapy and lobotomies and LSD therapy, all that kind of stuff. And so the guy who created the name or discovered the name or who coined it, I guess, his research was always around synthetic. So it makes sense that psychedelic is a synthetic word because it came from his research around synthetic mescaline, and obviously LSD is synthetic. Both of those, you could make a good argument, have derived from plants at some point down the line, even MDMA derived from sassafras at some point in time down the line. But it's so many chemical steps between both LSD and MDMA, between the two, that it's really hard. It's not like you're eating the mushroom straight out of the ground or eating the plant, brew or what have you. So that's where sort of psychedelic comes from. And obviously psychedelic then means, cultural context, it means music, it means, art, it
So this
means,
other whole like I look at it like cyberpunk. It's like it contains a whole bunch of these other cultural nuances and aspects that are like included in it.
Right, totally. And it's like a brand name, like Kleenex is a brand name or
Yeah.
Q-tip is a brand name.
Yeah, it's true. It's crazy actually, 'cause like especially in Toronto, where I am, psychedelics have become like trendy. Microdosing, all this kind of stuff, and that's why I was drawn to entheogen, because these everything ev I think every substance deserves respect and just proper, care when it comes to dealing with this, right? Because you're the magic. It's just this interfacing with you. And so going back to coming up with entheogen, and like when you're speaking to policy, is there a level of you having to almost educate who you're speaking to about your terms before you can actually have a conversation?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's actually the good point about using NTGM, because people, we got a lot of like back and forth. Nobody knows what NTG means. Why are you going to try and use it? Blah, blah, blah. All the we had so many naysayers, especially from allies, which is always funny to watch. And we're just like, we're going to try it anyway and see what happens. And it turns out, all right. So, but NTGen, as you mentioned, means generating divine within. This came up from a group of anthropologists a little later. They wanted to tap into a word that really reflects the indigenous traditions. You have an ayahuasquero or somebody that's working the iboga tradition or, you know, peyote tradition, whatever else. You're not calling those psychedelic experiences. You got to come up with some other word. And it does speak to this sacredness, this inner experience, this sort of a divinity within, this enthusiasm supposedly comes from, you know, inspired by the gods, that type of thing. So that's where I think this other word comes from. And when we started, everyone's like, what does that even mean? And we describe it to them. And you see people trying to like, is this a psychedelic or what? You know, and we're really speaking to that sort of other word. So it's just a fresh start for us, you know, and I think it's not as threatening for folks. And then it's easier to talk about plants and mushrooms, which also aren't as threatening as some random white powder or some liquid that we don't know what it is, which then gets into regulations and da, 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 all the things that people want from that. So we're just saying, like, hey, you know, we're going to work with this term entheogen, which speaks to these plants and mushrooms, or has become that. And now entheogen, the word entheogen is in policy all across the US, which is pretty amazing if you think about it. You
Wish
know,
the
a word that was
Canada
really
would
big for me.
get on the program here with that. We don't. We actually had decriminalized drugs, I think, in BC, but they did the same thing where it was like not with any nuance at all. You just decriminalized all drugs, including like cocaine and like fentanyl and stuff. And then, of course, then you're gonna get this like you're creating a problem of which like okay, now we need to like that's why it's not decriminalized because of
Yeah, I
this.
mean that's a whole nother thing. You know, we got a lot of pushback from folks around this idea of psychedelic exceptionalism at some point in time, which is basically saying, oh, you're saying that only these substances are worthwhile and everyone else is a bad person because they're not. And like we are definitely all in agreement that no one should be going to jail for anything. But certain things require a little bit higher level of, you know, support and infrastructure and education and harm reduction. These plants and mushrooms, for the most part, are not as risky in that regard. You know, you spoke to a little bit about MAPS and MDMA. You know, MDMA is one of those things too, where it's like there's a lot of blurring of the lines right now, where everything's a psychedelic. MDMA is a psychedelic.
Did you find
Ketamine's
it?
a
Did you
psychedelic. All
find
these other
MDMA?
things.
So actually, that's a good thing. Would you
I.
consider all psychedelics entheogens or no?
So you can make that argument,
I mean, you
right?
could make that
But
argument, right? Because then
you
every
can make,
tool you use to explore your own consciousness could
but like I,
theoretically, yeah.
but I would say, like, I mean, if we're talking about like truly what I think was meant by the original definition, research chemicals like the 2CBs, you know, or the 2CI, 2C, you know, all the phoxymethyl, all the things out there that are sort of just created recently, doesn't seem to have that long tradition. I think embedded in entheogen is something that's had a long tradition at some point in time. So you could make that argument for cannabis. You could probably make that argument for LSD because of ergotamine, because of the Eleusinian mysteries. There's a
Yes, you totally
long history
could.
there, even though maybe it wasn't extracted in the same way as we know it today. There was some sort of extraction process. MDMA, I think that came out by Merck right in or 1905, I think was when it first came about, something like that. So
Fun fact, I
that's
used to do work for Merck in my
okay,
athletic
right
career.
on.
Yeah.
So you get the MDMA recipe, right? But that went underground for a little bit until Shulgin brought it back in
Yes.
like the whatever
Shulgin.
50 or something like that. So, but I would call that like an empathogen or an
Oh,
attack.
that's a good word. That's a good classification, I think, for it because I love MDMA. Like that's like I would say my first ex like that with the music with like people who all love the music. You could argue that it was a spiritual experience on some regards, but I agree with you. It's like increasing empathy and this level of putting yourself in a certain state so that you're able to be connect like you're able to connect with your other human beings. But that's not ne I wouldn't necessarily say that's psychedelic or and like entheogenic in nature per se.
Yeah, and same with like ketamine, which is a dissociative, and a lot of that sort of dissociative family are referred to as psychedelic because they have some psychedelic quality. You go to places that look psychedelic, but it's a different, again, a different thing. And I think there's this rush to like ruin the nuance and throw everything in this so that, you know, now, but now what you're seeing is like city council members are saying, oh, we heard that psychedelics were disapproved by the FDA. And so, what does that mean about what you're talking about? And it's like, okay, well, actually, there's again, you have to break into the nuance. So, That's a whole another conversation when it comes to
Let's put
how do you
that
fix
future
your city
episode.
council meeting? Exactly. And then we can even have some people maybe come in and kind of discuss and debate. And that's what I'm excited about for this podcast for all the listeners out there and for us as well, is we know so many people. There are so many leaders all across the US that have worked on this project and have their own beautiful personal experiences. And at the end of the day, it doesn't matter how many neuroscientists talk about your MRI machine. What's most interesting, I think, for most people are these beautiful transformative experiences people go through, or these explorations of consciousness, or these places, these other dimensions or other realms, or they're talking to beings or entities, or things have agency. This is what's interesting. This is what I, when we talk about integration work, that's really what's coming out and interesting. Sure, you can look at what it does in the brain, but at the end of the day, each one of us is as skilled and qualified to talk about this issue as anyone that's a neuroscientist or anyone else, because once you've had that direct experience, you get a sense of just how big consciousnesses. And I think that's the thing. That's the major shifting point, just in having experience and to realizing, like, wow, there's more, is pretty mind-shattering for people that are stuck in a very boxed container of the world, right? Not realizing that there is more than just what's in our brain, that there is this expansive state that we can go to and that exists. So just even showing people that, I think, has really been a beautiful thing. But anyway, to go back to kind of like entheogen and psychedelic and MDMA and the FDA trials and all that kind of thing, that's a whole part of the ecosystem that I think is fascinating. But we focus on entheogens, really kind of being non-threatening, to talk about plants and mushrooms, to talk about this long history of use, to talk about how these traditions all across the planet have been working with this. Yes, we're familiar with a lot of the traditions in kind of certain areas, but this is going on everywhere, so I think, I mean, it's just, the whole idea that at some point in time, there were people that were just trying to nibble on things, food stuff in their environment, and mushrooms grow everywhere, that they're not going to run across mushrooms and then be like, wow, and of course, you can, another conversation we could have is the whole stoned ape theory idea,
Oh
which,
yeah,
is kind of,
definitely. Yeah, I mean, like, it's the whole, like, where did religion come from, right?
right.
Someone had an experience, had a funny idea, and then, like, it's and things grow from there. And I think that's a good segue into this next question I have about community versus corporate interests, right? So especially in Toronto, where, as I was saying, like, psychedelic there, it's like all the rage and trendy, and ketamine is involved in that as well, which is, it's just become very clinical, right? And what you were saying too, like, for an experience to cost like thousands of dollars, it's not making this accessible to people either. So the tension between like the grassroots movement versus the corporate influence, where they're like, oh, we see this being a great money maker, so we just want to, like, keep it for ourselves, or like almost like elitism when it comes to like usage of these substances, right? Where like Kamala can say like, oh, I smoked a joint and I inhaled and all this kind of stuff, but like, and you can still become president, where like some guy went to prison for however long for like smoking a joint
Maybe
from a
it's still in
cop.
prison.
Oh yeah,
Maybe
and
still in
yeah,
prison.
still there, and like nothing's been like done to rectify that. So can you like touch on that, on like what's kind of happened in terms of like the clash between, the people actually like having a let's say a relationship with the plants and fungi, because that's what it is. It is a, you build a relationship, and then you have this like other thing there being like, well, you're not doing it properly. It needs to be done in this setting with a therapist, with a qualified whatever. So how's that been like navigating all
Yeah.
that?
And that really kind of, again, ties into the even why we're talking about nature and why I think those communities are not exactly excited about us, because, the more people that grow their own mushrooms, the less people there are interested in the synthetic psilocybin that they had to go through the process to get IP protections on, if you're trying to like patent this thing that's extracted from this mushroom, but it's much easier to grow a mushroom than it is to make the chemical, right? So there's that kind of back and forth. The four different categories of plants and mushrooms that we work with too are mostly, mushrooms are really pretty easy to grow. Some cacti, there's probably 100 different cacti with mescaline. So there's some cacti that are harder to grow, but some that are easier, like the San Pedro cacti. Cacti is also really important in regards to peyote. Obviously, there's some sustainability issues in the endemic habitat, so we really want to encourage people to be able to cultivate their own, grow their own. That type of thing, so they don't have to, go into the endemic habitat and take anything from the Wiradjuri or the Huichol, who are the people who have had this tradition for a really long time. You have plants that have ibogaine, which there's a variety of plants, including, while it's not a huge amount, there's a star jasmine that grows pretty prolifically here in the Bay Area. And then you have plant combinations similar to ayahuasca, that have a DMT and an MAOI modulation, and those are actually, there's about 4,000 different plant combinations. So people can grow most of these plants. You know, yes, of course, some will take a little bit. There'll be some bumpiness as we move forward. You know, trying to figure out like how does this work and how do we do this in integrity and how do we do this in a good way and in relationship to the plants. But I think, you know, that's a really big part of this sort of back and forth between this corporate mindset, this pharmaceutical mindset, this control mindset, this you can't trust yourself. I think that what is this called? The psychedelic therapist industrial complex or something. I forgot what exactly
Yeah,
somebody
that
gave it up
sounds about
for.
right.
So basically, but basically the downside of that is it's basically saying that you can't trust yourself with your own mind and you're not qualified enough to sit with your friend in a compassionate way. Wait a second, people have been doing this for ages. Why is it now all of a sudden we need license to do this? Why is it that, you know, despite the fact that we've been doing peer integration work for over a decade now, now I need to get a certification? I have to get a certificate, you know, in order to be
Like
considered or
a
create
like
the.
certified psychedelic sitter kind of thing. That's what I've
Right,
seen.
exactly. Yeah. So, and then I think, you know, also get into the challenges around like, you know, what's the difference between a sitter and a guide and a facilitator? Like, you know, anyone can sit for somebody. Don't make sure they don't bump their heads. Make sure that they're okay. Make sure they have water. The music is okay. They're comfortable. Boom.
Rub
That's
their
all you need. You
hands,
don't
they're
have to be
comfy.
super
Yeah.
qualified. Yeah, exactly. Just be a friend, right? So anyway, so that's kind of like back and forth. But then you have something like the RAND report, which just came out recently, about maybe, I don't know, a few months ago, and they actually looked and said since I don't know, since in 2023, they had, according to their numbers, 8 million people had mushroom experience over the last year in 2023. Of those people, 46% of them either grew it themselves, got it from friends, or got it for free. So in terms of a marketplace like you're talking about here, you know, there's not really a huge market that's going to be like a cannabis market because people can grow it, and I could grow enough for myself that I'm going to have way too much abundance, and I'm going to give it to my friends. And everyone that's growing is probably in the same boat where they're just like, oh, there's more than I need here. They're going to go bad before I'm able to eat them all because who's eating mushrooms every week? Probably barely anyone. You
No,
know, it's like
yeah. Like
you have a
it's one of
mushroom experience every few months or something like that. If you know you're really doing it, if you're doing, you know, going deep, you know, in terms of just let it settle and kind of like, you know, work your way into it. So there's not this sort of big cannabis market that you would see. And you know, because we're helping people to teach people how to grow their own and that kind of thing. You know, I think we're a threat, a bit of a threat to that. You know, we're outside of that control model, which, you know, I think is great for people, is a little bit concerning for folks. And you're seeing that, you know, there's a lot less money in terms of investment. You know, people are trying to find these regulated controlled models, which are just so expensive that people are like, why am I going to do this? You have the stuff going on in Oregon now where these actually, this is what happens though when you have a control model and a underground model. And we're always, everyone's always like, oh, why can't you all just get along, right? But what ends up happening is that the control model is
They,
like
yeah.
losing money, so we got to stop these guys over here,
For a
right? So it's
threat, a threat.
the decrim folks or the people doing underground, they don't, there's no threat of like the booming, you know, industry that's being expected here. It's just like, okay, we're just going to do our thing. So we have in Oregon where they say that because it's so expensive, because of all the regulations and the hoops they got to jump through, $3,000 to $5,000 for a thing, that a lot of the people that are getting trained, which there are a lot of people that have been trained, are now doing this work underground for a lot lower costs. Well, Oregon's now trying to put another bill together, which says basically, if you know somebody, A, you're not labeled to do underground work. And if you know somebody that does underground work, you got to rat them out. Right. So
Like, sure.
basically, yeah, exactly. We got to like destroy all the competition, which is like pretty silly to think about. Like, what are we talking about, healing here? Or are we talking about how to make the most money? You know, and of course, people got to understand, people got to pay their bills and do their thing and all that kind of thing. But you know, at the end of the day, we're really talking about healing. We're talking about, you know, people's birthrights to consciousness, all these types of things. So
Yeah. Like, I
this
mean, like,
back and
it
forth.
always gets wrapped up in mental health, I find here. But that's. I mean, when I was going to school, I went to school for English literature and psychology because I wanted to become a therapist back before I became disillusioned with the whole thing. But I end up like volunteering at like clinics and stuff, and I was just like, wow, the system is not equipped to help people at a really fundamental level. It's just not. You're still just a number. You're a cog. You're not. There's no like just this personal thing like what you said there but like just be a good friend, right? That's really what the best trip sitter is probably like your best friend who kind of like knows you,
Right.
and like if you're going through a tough time in the trip, can be like, you got this, like it's okay, like you got, like I'm here, no worries, just like keep going, like just a little bit of support from that perspective.
Right. Right. And they're not gonna sit there and I know for myself, if I'm having a big part of a journey and like someone is taking
And
notes.
like looking at you with like a laugh, that's gonna influence your
Right,
trip, I think, right? You're gonna probably not go to the same place you would go otherwise. And I mean, I think where are we for time? So, oh, one last question before maybe we can go into maybe hyping up content of what upcoming shows will be like and where people can catch us next time. But I think a big one is like this whole idea of personal sovereignty and just your right to explore your own consciousness. And I'm an astrologer and I do like tarot readings and all this like woo-woo stuff, and I found that like there just needs to be more, I think, like just practices and us like figuring out like little rituals for ourselves of like, oh hey, I take LSD and then I divinate with the cards as like a practice, and like I make sure I sage and at the same time. So just all of these different things haven't been figured out yet. We're living in a brand new world as it comes to this, and I really think that it's like what Decrim Nature is like doing the work of is just like get out of the way, government and
Right.
bodies of whatever, like, and let us fix it. Let's fix the world you've ruined because it really should be a lot more fun. And I get it, all of this stuff about paying rent and surviving and all of this stuff, but this is all like culture and society, and we are hurtling towards the age of Aquarius, whatever that means, turning of the ages, Kali Yuga. So old systems are breaking down. So I don't think it's the best thing for us to just, tie psychedelics or entheogens to a system that is just using them, I feel like,
Right.
to stay
Right.
alive, like for its last legs. Like,
Right.
look, we're still relevant. We're
Right.
still, and like, it's not, no, like it's just time for us to just be like, you know what? If you want to go do the therapeutic model, if you want to do it that way, cool. But if you don't, you can't put me in a cage for it. So
Right.
I think just like the argument for you to make your own personal decisions and like more people to be guides, mentors, places like your integration circles, just these like more community-based spaces that we can go and just, share our crazy stories, maybe do remote viewing together, maybe practice psychic abilities together. That something just a little bit more fun as opposed to just being like, I'm worried that like someone's gonna knock down my door because I'm like doing something that is illegal. So yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so many things you said there were awesome. I like specifically, and I thought about this before, and I'm sure there'd be a lot of mental health practitioners who aren't going to be too happy with that. So just vetting there, just a little disclaimer, folks. It's okay.
Yes,
We're just
yes.
going to talk about big issues here. But the idea of like, this whole, and you still see it with the American Psychiatric Association is still pushing back a lot of different sort of heads of that. But like, this is like kind of the last throes of like mental health practitioners finding a way to be more relevant than a plant that grows out of the ground, right? Like, we have to like put somebody there to do the thing that the plant and the individual are doing. You don't need to put anybody there, it's in fact, it's better for you to not say anything during the experience and be there afterwards, like this integration or that type of thing. So I think,
Totally.
and that really taps into what is mental health and asks these much bigger questions about connection and alienation and isolation and systems that are corrupt and systems that are falling apart. And like, this is like the okay, we got to, maybe if we put this band-aid on here, but this quote unquote band-aid of psychedelics and entheogens have been out of the system for so long, those same APA doctors and folks that are trying to pull it in now spent all their life trying to push it away, and now they're trying to like get it back in here. So that becomes, kind of challenging. And then you have what happens is because of the Controlled Substance Act and the way that it's set up is that you have this, and I speak to this a bunch on podcasts, is you have this sort of medicalization model, which is like in order to not be Schedule One, it has to have medical value. So now everyone's rushing to try and push to be a medical value. And then what happens is the medical folks, and I've spoken to folks, so I'm like, well, what do you consider recreational to a doctor? Is anyone that's not in a doctor's office? It's like that's everything outside of your care is recreational. And of course, recreational meaning high risk, partying, like really bad. This is the bad way to go about it, but they don't talk about spirituality. They don't talk about citizen science. What is consciousness? What types of things can we learn about this? Like, what else is out there? Can we explore these different terrains? I have heard a talk by Clint E.E., who's out of Detroit, passed away a few years ago, but that had some really interesting conversations around traditions. He believes that, the hieroglyphs were meant to be seen through mushroom eyes,
I
and they
do.
weren't multi-dimensionally seen, just kind of two-dimensionally. And
Totally.
there's this sort of interaction. There's all this sacred text and sacred places and sacred writings that we don't know anything about because we're not using the correct
Our
vision to read them.
instruments, yeah, they're like, I like to put it this way, like we almost have this like the tether, like our at our crown chakra that attaches us up to like the other realms, and it gets like full of kind of dirt and muck and stuff. And so entheogens, they help to just clear. I think Aldous Huxley said that, like, you just clean your doors of perception a little bit, and so you can see the entire universe and yourself a little bit more clearly, and your beautiful, unique place in it. So it's kind of crazy, as you said too, like what you said, like, well, what is recreational? Also, like, what is considered medically valuable, and who gets to decide that?
Right. Yeah, especially when it comes to us really not really understanding mental health anyway, in any kind of big way. And that's by you can see that because everyone always says we're in a mental health crisis. Well, if we understood mental health, we probably wouldn't be in a crisis because we'd address it a little better, right? So, I mean, outside of the system causing some of that as well, but anyway, that's a whole other conversation. So, this recreational medical dynamic, and then you have, the sacred. You have the creativity, you have the insights and aha moments, you have exploration of your own personal relationship, questions about consciousness and ego and the nature of reality. All these things are possible, but we're not addressing them when we say, does it help with treatment-resistant depression? And in some ways, when we're talking about it only being helpful for that, then everyone who has treatment-resistant depression thinks, ah, this is going to be my saving grace. I'm going to go here. And
Yeah.
if all of a sudden, like, well, actually, it's much more complex because first you got to deconstruct your whole worldview, which is going to be depressing. And
Yes.
then maybe have to reconstruct some things. And like, so all these other qualities that come into play when you're working with these medicines that people, when it becomes such an emphasis on mental health as like a cure-all, even though they say it's not, a cure-all, of course, but that's kind of that's what's being implied there. Then I think there's a lot of people who might get disappointed because it maybe doesn't help them in the way that they had expected. And then instead of saying, oh, well, actually, this helped me with sacredness and, connecting with my family, and I realized that was why I was depressed.
Yeah.
Oh, now the conversation happened. This is the out. This is the byproduct of all these other stuff that can be helped with, So,
Yes, you totally hit the nail on
anyway,
the head.
so yeah.
Because, I mean,
So
like,
when
for
we started
example,
talking,
oh, sorry, I was going to say, like, your mental health could depend on, like, having a hug a day, for example. Like personally, for me to be healthy, I need one hug a day, right? But that's what I mean, like the medical model is like it's messed when it comes to that, right? Like it's especially when I'm like working in the in certain hospitals or clinics where it's almost just like if you're too much mentally, like you're too much for us to deal with. So like we'll just institutionalize you and like put you over here where I can't see you. So instead of like having those hard conversations and building the containers by which people can like discover themselves and like figure out what for them is required to live a happy, fulfilled life. Because a lot of people just don't know what would make you happy, like and have the space to like go for it. And I think that all of this stuff around it where it's like it's illegal or the stigma around it, and so that you have certain people who just like never want to try it. I think that Decrim Nature and all of this work about expanding the language, expanding the stories are a great way for people to like stand up for themselves and do something maybe illegal, right? So
Right. Yeah. I mean,
I
yeah. I mean, we hear that all the time. Like I think this could be. I really like to explore it, but because it's against the law, I never will. Or even talking to people about people that are kind of like bending the law. Well, they got to worry
yeah.
about job stigma. They got to worry about their kids.
Yeah, you're a
Child protective
parent, you don't
services.
want that kind of
Yeah,
stuff.
and there's, I mean, and there's this mindset for some reason that like someone having these experiences is like a quote unquote bad person or would be a bad parent. Of course, like obviously you're not like hopefully journeying really heavy when the kids are around, but like I've heard from so many parents that are like, this has helped me become a better parent. I'm tolerant. I'm more understanding of the world. I see consciousness in a different way. I see growth in a different way. There's so many people that have actually benefited from this, but there's again this like initial stigma that like, okay, if somebody's doing this thing, then they might not be, if it's not medically approved. So then you have people that are like, well, the only way this to be acceptable in society is if I say I have XYZ or I get diagnosed, which is a lifelong diagnosis from a mental health practitioner, that now you always have depression your whole life. Despite maybe you just wanted to try this substance, you know. So I think, you know, decrimming, saying, hey, we're not trying to shove this down everyone's throat. We're not trying to put it on every street corner, but we are trying to say is like, let's not arrest people, let's people connect in community. And I think that's another thing that we're encouraging is like learning from each other again and not being so respond, you know, sort of dependent upon authority to tell us which way is the right way to do it, because no one can tell you how best your consciousness is except for you. Not even your friends can do that. That's for you. You can have friends
Preach.
that can help steward you or guide you or whatever else, but that's going to be a one-on-one conversation, which I think people forget about a lot of times. It's you and the mushrooms, or you and the plant material,
You and the universe.
you know. Exactly.
So that's actually a wonderful way for us to come into our conclusion of this pilot episode. Just because this show is called Restoring Our Roots. And I love that from a perspective of through conversations, through discourse, through revealing and storytelling, that we can restore our roots. And, you know, like the Lion King, remember who you are, right? And once you like remember that, then I feel like you're just so much more empowered to like do what you need to do for the benefit of humanity and the universe. And so, Larry, do you want to go into like what viewers can expect from this podcast going forward, as well as how often we'll be going live and when they can expect replays and what kind of guests we can kind of
Great. Yeah,
hype the
absolutely.
show up.
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, first and foremost, the fact that this is even starting, that's the
Happening.
hype.
Yeah, we did it.
The hype for me. No joke. I mean, not I mean, like literally we've been talking about this for probably 4 years with different people and everything. So it's nice to get this all together and at least get it started. Our hopes is to do a live show every Sunday, every other week, so twice a month. And then we're going to have, you know, a variety of different either conversations about relevant topics, about reviews of the ecosystem. There's a lot of stuff happening right now in terms of, you know, all the different, you know,
Updates on like
policy
traction.
updates and yeah, exactly everything that's happening. And you know, what's beautiful, as I mentioned earlier, is we have so many people from so many different places that have worked on this policy, leaders from all over the place, you know, that have already
Firsthand
come back.
experiential stories.
First-hand experience. We have our board members. We have board members, friends, and community. We're going to have a bunch of, you know, probably indigenous practitioners. We'll have some philosophers. We'll have some scholars from academic institutions. You know, the idea really is to have a robust conversation on all the different levels. So, what does this mean, even for, you know, mental health? How has this helped with mental health? Yes, and just because we say those things about mental health, we're just saying it's much more complex. Not that it doesn't help people. Are not going to be such a thing, but we're saying it's a complex conversation, and to dive into how it helps somebody with their depression is really fascinating. Because if you read the studies just beyond what you're seeing in the research papers, you're realizing like people are talking about these really beautiful spaces or these really profound ideas or these recollections of things that they hadn't thought of before. There's these healings that happen internally, you know, whether it be spiritually or just sort of internally. That's also really, really fascinating, but we don't have time. It's like the qualitative side of the quantitative, right? We want to get into the rich qualitative discussions, the stories, the narratives, the ideas, and bring in a variety of people to kind of talk about it. So we're really excited about this. The platforms that we're going to be working on. I'm totally new to this. So again, thank you, Rachel, for
No
all this.
worries. Yeah, well, this is
I'm
the
going to
new
ask you to jump
world.
in and talk about like the platforms and sort of how we're going to go about doing this.
Yeah, for sure. So we are going to be going live on, we will go live on YouTube, I think, as well, but we will be live on Rumble and Odyssey, as well as you can get replays on Spotify. So if you want to listen to it like audio version only, but I do believe Spotify has video as well. But we'll have replays on Spotify and as well on the Decrim Nature website, I think, as well. We're going to have a little space for the
Yes.
podcast to go forward.
We're redesigning our website right now, so we'll be having a new one coming up hopefully in the next couple of weeks.
Amazing. Sounds good. So I think that takes care of that for our fun pilot episode. Larry, do you want to, I guess do we have like a catch, I don't want to say catch, but a
We let's
catchphrase
do.
closer, you know what I mean? Like
Yeah, so thank you all for being here and listening to us ramble on in the goodness and expand your consciousness, embrace the mystery, and discover the wisdom of plants and fungi.
love that. Beautiful. Until next time, my friends, signing off.
Good night, everybody. Thank you, Rachel. Thank you.
Plant power to the people. Plant power to the people. Where you dream is where I'll meet you.